can't just rub oregano on anything. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens.
Anthony.
Lightning.
Very, very frightening me.
Is it frightening me?
Galileo.
Galileo? Are you, when you were a kid, did it frighten you? Were you one of those kids who were afraid of lightning, or did it like excite you and thrill you?
I loved it. I loved it. And there was a certain part of me that was convinced that if I got struck by it, I would get super speed.
Super speed specifically because of the flash.
Yeah, lightning is fast and so super speed. Or maybe like electric powers of some kind.
Yeah, electro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought, you know, I grew up in California in the Bay Area. Thunderstorms, very rare. You know, we got fog. That's what we got. We got fog and sunshine. That was the two states. Very, very rarely did we get thunder and lightning. So anytime I experienced thunder and lightning, it just seemed like magic. It seemed incredible. And so I was very dazzled by it. And now that I'm in areas where I get it more often, I still sort of have that residual feeling of excitement when I see lightning in the sky.
I love a thunderstorm. I really do.
Yeah.
I'm one of the few people where, like, if there's a thunderstorm going on when I'm in a plane, I actually dig it.
Yeah. There's no fear of like, oh my God, the plane's going to get struck by lightning. Yeah.
Nah.
Well, we got a story this week about lightning. I don't think we've ever really talked on this show in the many years we've done it about lightning specifically.
Well, we try to stay away from anything controversial.
It's true. It's true. That third rail of science.
Yeah.
Lightning.
Listen, it's the lightning truthers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't want to attract them here.
They always try to convince you that there's no such thing as lightning. Mm-hmm. It's all a hoax. You know what? I bet if we Googled right now, you could find somebody trying to convince people that lightning is a hoax.
Look, if you did, I bet it would somehow connect to Flat Earth.
Yeah, probably.
I bet it would somehow connect to Flat Earth.
Well, here's the thing that could bolster the lightning hoaxer sect's beliefs is, I didn't know this. Maybe you know this. We don't actually know how lightning works. We don't actually know the precise creation of lightning. What causes it?
The speed force?
Well, that's one of the prevalent theories, is the speed force.
Yeah.
But that's mostly centered on, what is it, Retro City? What's his hometown?
Keystone.
Damn it. Couldn't pull it out.
Or Central City. Sorry. He's Central City.
Yeah. Most of those theories are Central City theories.
Yeah.
But no, there are several prevalent theories about how lightning is generated in clouds in the sky. We don't actually know how it works. And the reason for that is it's really hard to observe it. Why? Because clouds are opaque. You can't look into them. And so we've never actually witnessed the beginning of a bolt of lightning. Of course,
huh.
We all know the story of Benjamin Franklin and the kite.
Yeah. And the little mouse.
We all know that story. Yeah.
The little mouse that lived in his hat.
Yes. We all know the story.
Yeah.
We all know the factual tale of the mouse and the hat.
Ben and me. We all know.
And a lot of people over decades of research have tried to get inside a cloud and watch it happen. They've, you know, weather balloons or other things sent into a thunderstorm cloud to try to observe or measure the moment of creation, the what exact precise method creates a lightning bolt.
Are we just hoping these cameras get to the right place at the right time?
Well, yeah, you go up. Yes, that's part of the problem. Another part of the problem is whenever you send anything into a thunderstorm, into a cloud, a balloon or a rocket or even airplanes, you know, they'll fly up into thunderstorms and try to, you know, record as much data as they can. Anytime you send something into it, that thing will be a new variable.
Right.
Like that thing can change the cloud, or we don't know how much it affects things inside the cloud itself.
Yeah. And they could also go into, they could go into the in-between time and then have to deal with Langoliers. When you go into a cloud, the problem is you can try to take video, but the Langoliers will steal your camera.
They'll steal it. They'll steal your soul and your camera at the same time.
Do you remember how shitty those Langoliers looked?
Oh, man. Not good.
That was like some real early...
Shit out of me, though.
Real early television CG. But
sometimes worse is scarier, though.
Mm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
At least for a kid, you know?
Because it sticks out more. It's like so disturbingly bad.
It's wrong. It's wrong on a number of levels.
Yeah. I think this is fascinating. I also, you know, just because obviously timing, obviously they cause a variable. Obviously, I would imagine one of the things about sending cameras and equipment up into lightning storms and extreme weather is like, I mean, is it also going to destroy the camera? Like, is it going to screw with the equipment? Like,
yeah.
So what is it? It's not God bowling then?
It's not God bowling. That's one thing we can rule out. Although, did you know that one of the most prevalent theories is that it's the interaction of cosmic rays? Did you know that?
No.
We got some full-on Fantastic Four happening up there, baby.
Cosmic ray interaction inside of a cloud creates lightning.
This is one of the prevalent theories. The two most prevalent theories, one of them is that cosmic rays, literally particles from outer space, collide with electrons inside thunderstorms, and that strengthens the electrical field inside the cloud and causes a lightning bolt.
I mean, you know, it's funny, like this is the sort of thing where this is the sort of question you ask all the time as a kid and nobody has a good answer for you. And then I think over time you just become desensitized to asking the question anymore, because the more I consider lightning, the more I'm like, yo, lightning's really destructive. That's a lot of that's a lot of power. Like,
I mean,
where it from?
That's one of the things this article that, by the way, A. Tomlinson posted in our Discord. Thank you, A. Tomlinson.
Thank you, A. Tomlinson.
Solid contributor. This is one of the things that this paper talks about, is there have been literal religions based around lightning. Lightning is one of the most fundamental, most powerful, most unavoidable forces that human beings have witnessed throughout time.
And other than love.
Well, the fifth element is love. But
it's a little light of love.
Light of love. We still don't know what it is. Mm. So here's the thing that's exciting about this paper. A new paper has been published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters, which, by the way, gets steamy. Some of those geophysical research letters.
I think they make some of them up. They have to. They can't all be submitted.
They say they're all real. They claim they're all real. I don't know.
Dear geophysical research, you'll never believe what happened to me and my weather balloon the other day. I ran into quite the updraft. I don't know, man. That stuff just doesn't happen. I know a lot of geophysicists, and they'll tell you, they're like, that stuff just doesn't happen, man.
I don't know. I've heard some science.
You think it's sexiest science. You really do. And it kind of is, but even as the sexiest science, like, that stuff doesn't happen consistently.
Sometimes they say they put the physical in geophysical, you know what I mean? So this new paper, this is really, really cool to me. So there's this thing in the Netherlands called the LOFAR, which is a low frequency array. It's a network of thousands of little tiny radio telescopes. Now, the reason this thing exists is to look into space and observe the cosmos.
Great. Right?
It's a series of radio telescopes, basically, that are pointed at space.
Okay.
And they're cool and they're useful and scientists have been using them.
Love it.
But they exist in our atmosphere. So when it's cloudy, they're basically useless. You don't get, when it, there's a huge cloud layer, you don't get to see space.
Sure.
It's being blocked by the clouds. So what have they been doing? Looking at the clouds.
Oh, I was going to say fucking off early.
No.
That's what I would do. I'd be like, oh shit, clouds again.
We're going to get geophysical tonight, baby. Yeah. Clouds. No, they decided to just point them at the clouds and see what we see. And in 2018, they just happened to catch a massive bolt of lightning.
Why have they been hiding this from us for 4 years?
Well, they really didn't
answer that.
The data.
Oh, to process the data.
They didn't process the data because it's not what these things are for.
Process the data.
Nobody's like, let's look at the lightning.
Maybe
data.
To process the data, send the data on to the relevant people with the relevant clearances, and then rewrite the data. You know what I'm saying? Maybe hide all of that bowling God is doing.
There was a stamp that said Central City on it. I don't know what they're.
It was Speed Force, but they redacted it. so they got this data, but they didn't know what to do with it because they weren't people who studied that.
It just hadn't been processed until recently. Okay,
they used to process it.
The article doesn't go into what the processing is. I think it means that basically they're like, yeah, the telescopes were on, the LOFAR was recording, but it was a cloudy day. Let's not look at that day's data. And
right.
Then somebody's like, wait, hold on a tick. Look at this. A giant ass bolt of lightning happened while we were recording.
Yeah.
Let's check it out.
Okay.
And it turns out this is the most detailed view, uncorrupted by any kind of, you know, object going into the cloud. This is a detailed view of the initiation point of a bolt of lightning. And the coolest thing is, like, we've seen, you know, you can have a radio telescope looking at a cloud when a bolt of lightning happens, but most of the time you'll get like a 2D image, which is interesting. But, and we've done that before. We've, you know, it's not the first time that somebody's been like, oh, radio waves can look inside clouds. But because this is an array, it is a bunch of different small telescopes that are all connected.
Bullet time, lightning time.
Yes. Yes. Basically lightning time. We get a video recording in three dimensions of the inside of a cloud at the moment a lightning bolt is created.
And you can spin around the lightning bolt, and then you can put Keanu Reeves in and he can spin around too. And the lightning bolt comes from and he goes.
Have you seen the new one yet?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Spoilers for the new one. Skip ahead 15 seconds if you don't want any spoilers for the new one, but
it's perfectly fine. Yes.
How annoying is it that like they talk about bullet time in the context?
Oh,
of the Matrix?
Hate
bullet
it.
Bullet time is what, how the audience views it from Neo's perspective. It's not bullet time. He's just moving fast.
No, he's moving fast. It's not bullet time for him. And the co-opting of just, there was way too much video game language in it. I couldn't with the dumb down. Like, look, were the first three like pseudo intellectual and a little up their own ass? Yes. Is that kind of what made them special? Yes. And so when this one was just like, herder video game, herder, I was just like, okay, man. All right. Do we just not care anymore? All right. Let's just move on.
That's 15 seconds of Matrix review. You're welcome. Anyway, but yes, this basically creates a video recording in three dimensions of the initiation point of a lightning bolt.
Now,
and we've literally as human beings never seen this before.
Now I'm looking at the LOFAR data here. I looked up the measurements and look, this is very cool. I want you all, as you look at this, to dial down your expectation for what this looks like, because what I'm looking at is a 3D turnaround of data points, which is probably the most useful thing that they got. It's not like just a picture of lightning that's really clean and really clear. And what, you know, this is them 3D mapping the data of the lightning to see what happened.
Yes. So yeah, the coolest part isn't the image. It's the information that we get from the image, right? It's the fact that we now actually have a pretty clear indication of what causes a lightning bolt to shoot from the sky.
Can I tell you that the reason why I felt like I had to say that, particularly in right now, is we just got that video from NASA of the solar probe, of the probe going into the sun, and it looks exactly the way you think it would, like where there are all these streaks of like light and heat and like, and you can like, you know, there's no noise in it, but you can like add your own noise and it's like, and it's like an amazing video that goes like so fast and so cool. And it's like spinning. Look, that's your sizzle, baby. That's your sizzle. What we're saying here is this is steak. We got real data.
Yeah. Yeah. And it points scientists toward a working theory of how, for the first time, of how lightning is initiated inside a thundercloud.
It is bowling, but it's not God.
It's not God bowling at all.
Okay.
It's God playing lawn darts.
Dangerous. Dangerous.
No.
Put out an eye.
There are clusters of ice crystals that are forming inside a cloud. They start colliding, bashing into one another.
Okay.
And they sharpen. They become needle-shaped.
Yes.
And some in that collision, some of their electrons break off.
Yes.
Which creates these shards, these tiny, tiny microscopic ice shards, charged one end positively and the other negatively.
Whoa.
The positive end draws electrons from molecules all around it in the air, right? Yeah. And it keeps doing that. It pulls more and more electrons from air molecules farther and farther away from it. And that creates what they call streamers of basically ionized air. So that like they kind of shoot off from the end of the tip of the ice crystal.
Yes, like the animation of a car ignition from the beginning of a Fast and Furious movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Tiny Vin Diesels.
Yeah.
Are driving lightning cars. That's how you could think of this.
And that's how I do think of it now, regardless of whatever you say next.
So they call these things streamers, these ribbons of ionized air. Mm-hmm. And there are more and more and more of them. Tons and tons and tons of them are happening all around and branching off again and again and again.
Yeah.
And that creates heat in the air. And that rips electrons more and more, getting ripped off of the air molecules. So longer current flows from ice crystal to ice crystal, creating these streamers. And eventually, that becomes hot enough and conductive enough to change into something else, something they call a leader. Now, here's the weird part. We don't know what a leader is or how it what causes it to change from a streamer to a leader. We just
disagree.
Know that at a certain point,
disagree, because I went to a Tony Robbins seminar and I'll tell you exactly what makes a leader.
and what is that?
I mean, there's a leader inside of all of us. And all it takes is just huge veneers and really nice suits.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's what you see inside of a thundercloud. So these leaders basically is the thing that's like, okay, we're out of here. All these streamers are happening inside. These ionized air ribbons are happening inside the cloud. And then all of a sudden, for some reason that we're not really sure about, one of them just goes, I'm out of here. It gets to a point of volatility or heat or whatever that inflection point is. Mm-hmm. And it leaps down and connects to the ground, creating a bolt of lightning.
Well, I've been in a lot of pits at shows, and I'll tell you this. You can only stay around close to the stage for so long. You know? Everybody's just bashing around and like it's too hot and it's too wet and you gotta get out of there eventually. So I get it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what's going on. You gotta get out of there.
You gotta get out of there. And also Speed Force.
Yeah, probably the Speed Force.
Yeah. So the questions that remain, so we've seen this now, we've seen this with the LOFAR, mm-hmm. but the questions that still are lingering are, where's the first electron coming from?
Yeah.
And how does that discharge start near the ice particle that creates that arc all the way to the ground? We don't know what that is. We haven't witnessed that. We don't have a recording of that. All we have is that moment immediately after the first ice particles begin ionizing the air. We don't know what causes that first jump, but we now have a record in three dimensions of it happening inside a cloud, which is awesome.
I just have such, it's so fascinating to me to think about these collisions happening so fast and in such a small, like with such small particles that it's like literally brushing off electrons. Like, so like it, like the tiny, like what is like, wow, it's so tiny in there. What is going on in there?
Yeah.
And like, how small can a particle get and still be like sharp? You know what I mean? That's the other thing I'm thinking of.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, it's like in science fiction when they talk about a, I think Neal Stephenson's novels talk about a blade that's so sharp, the edge is a single molecule.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And it's like, a single
atom or whatever. Yeah.
Is that what we're getting?
It's kind of what we're getting. And the coolest thing is, I think one of the coolest things is because we don't know what immediately starts the first ionization process, what we don't know that the catalyst that starts it, it could still be cosmic rays. Some of the scientists are like, this doesn't invalidate cosmic ray theory, bros. And the other scientists are like, but yeah, but we don't see any cosmic rays. It's like, yeah, but you didn't record the part where the cosmic rays
went. You did not see cosmic rays.
Exactly.
Dummies.
So team cosmic ray is still in the fight, baby. Still in it.
Something interesting that I'm seeing here underneath this graph is there has been like an overlap between lightning research and COVID research.
Yeah, yeah, because lightning, literally 10% fewer lightning bolts in COVID times. And they're saying that's because there's less pollutants in the air.
Wow. Okay.
Isn't that wild? We literally stayed indoors and stopped the lightning 10%.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Because that also shows like, all right, listen, I'm team cosmic rays for everything. You tell me anything is cosmic rays and I am here and I'm ready for it and I want to believe.
Yeah. Well, but, you say that until your skin turns to orange rock and then you'll be unhappy.
Then I'll say ever loving.
Yes.
And I'll say it's clobbering time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, and I do think it's interesting that, you know, it's clearly some sort of like chemical reaction. It's a mix of like chemical and molecular reactions in the air that are, you know, physical forces and chemical forces, because we got rid of the shit that we put into the air for a few months.
Yeah.
And there was less lightning. So, I mean, who knows what's bouncing around up there, dude?
Well, yeah, they say that there were fewer nucleation points for ice crystals because there's less pollutants in the air.
Man, there's so much stuff bouncing around up in the sky. You got to be careful.
That's why, you know, post-apocalypse, when the pollutants blot out the sun, there'll be constant lightning storms. It'll just be lightning storm after lightning storm in the orange haze that is our atmosphere.
Right. And we'll be batteries, but like it won't be as interesting an idea as it was when we first came up with it.
Yeah.
And like maybe we'll be in a simulation, but like all of our ideas about the simulation are kind of like well tread at this point. You know?
Yeah.
It's gonna be a very boring post-apocalypse, is what I'm saying. Well, but it's perfect, but perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. Very, I mean, really well made. From a technical standpoint.
I mean, the action won't be as good.
No, God, no. How could it be? this is cool. It's so fascinating. It's like, it's something so primal. And I love that, like, we still are just like, what? Like, we're just now figuring it out. Like,
I honestly, you said it, you know, at the very beginning, which is, it's one of those questions that every kid asks their parents, like, where does lightning come from? And I remember my dad, I think, giving me some kind of answer that he probably pulled out of his ass, you know, that was like, you know, friction in the clouds.
Yeah.
Or, you know, clouds bumping into one another or something like that, or, you know, God bowling or whatever he said.
some dumb
but
bullshit.
I think it's wild that we didn't actually really know.
Yeah.
And we also had been trying to record it and hadn't been able to. And then the way that we actually do record it is a complete accident or a complete, you know, non-intentional way of doing it. It's like, oh, there just happened to be that day where this array that was not even looking at this happened to see it. And then somebody was like, well, maybe we should take a look at this. And it's completely revolutionizing what we know about lightning. That's amazing.
That's crazy, man. I love that. I love that very much. Hey, thanks to A. Tomlinson, by the way, for sending that in. You can check out the Discord as well, if you so choose. All you got to do is support us over on Patreon. Just head over to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. And for a dollar or more a month, you get access to the Discord, which is full of absolutely wonderful people talking about absolutely wonderful things. And as you give a little more, you get a little more in return. So go check that out if you enjoy the show. Help us support ourselves and this show and more cosmic ray research.
We just barely missed our 2021 goal, which was 100% conversion rate of audience to patrons. Just barely missed it.
Just barely missed it.
We're working on that for 2022. Get on board.
Yeah, all we want to say is, you know, if you've ever listened to a single show, you owe us at least $1. Like, we're just saying, like, look, we do it for free and we do it for the love and whatever. But like, also, you better give us $1. Patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Jeff, I found so many things this week as I was looking for stories, and so many of them are good, but they're not quite full episode good.
Ooh, are you going to do multiple stories?
I'd like to just, if I could, Jeff, I'd like to hit you with some headlines and some little science stories that have really sort of tickled my fancy this week.
Are we doing, Anthony, are we doing a lightning round?
Lightning round, they said in unison, because they were, we finished each other's sentences. let's do a little, we'll call it a lightning round. This first one that I found is kind of interesting. People who are obsessed with celebrities score lower on measures of cognitive ability.
You dumb! You like celebrities, you dumb, is what it says, right?
Yeah, so it's really funny. People were like, well, are they dumb because of it? Or do dumber people like...
Wait, when you say people said, do you mean the magazine?
Yeah, People Magazine said, idiots, they're just like stars. So here's the thing, like people were like, wait a minute. Now, is there observation bias here? Because we're looking at people and we're like, these people are obsessed with celebrities. They say they're dumber. So it's the fact that they're obsessed with celebrities that makes them dumb. Or are they dumb? And so dumber people are just more naturally obsessed with celebrities. That's a question that a lot of people reading this had.
Is that any celebrity or are there particular celebrities that make you dumb?
I could name off a few that I think make you dumber, but I feel like that's not my place. I think an obsessive interest in celebrity culture at all is kind of, it's something that's kind of interesting to me because it's like, why, you don't know these people? What is the deal? Why are you so, like, I don't mind a little bit of like, look at this weird shit that's going on. But like people who are like all about celebrity gossip.
Yeah.
It's a little weird to me.
I want to tread lightly here because, you know, you don't want to just insult people, but
you mean the magazine?
Yeah. I'll insult us, the magazine, but I won't insult people, the magazine.
Where do you stand on In Touch?
Oh, if I'm hearing about it for the first time now, is that a magazine?
Yeah, it's a magazine.
It does feel like, you know, celebrity, what's a celebrity doing is a relatively shallow interest mm-hmm. in the sense that it is, you know, there's not much there. And I would suspect that if you were drawn to that as a primary preoccupation, you are only sort of interested in a very shallow level of knowledge about anything. Right?
Is that
a fair inference?
That's a fair inference, I think. One of the quotes from the paper here says that our results support previous findings showing that excessive behaviors, such as celebrity worshiping, can possibly impair cognitive functioning, presumably due to the fact that it requires increased focus and energy invested in the behavior that becomes dominant in the individual's life. So what this paper is saying is like, yeah, it's more that it's an addictive behavior that people are caught up in a cycle of, and any sort of addictive or obsessive behavior is going to impair your cognitive functioning. So it's not so much the celebrity worship itself.
Right.
You know, they also said that it's possible that celebrity worship functions like an addictive behavior and requires cognitive effort to be maintained. It's associated with addictive and problematic social media use. There's a little bit of sort of the parasocial relationship thing, I think, that feeds into it. The idea of like, because these are people and you're reading about them all the time, you become invested in them as though they were people in your life. And that in and of itself becomes a little bit self-feeding because you want to check in on them.
Interesting. Yeah, it's hard for me to, I think my intuition on it is maybe flawed, is that people don't, my intuition was that people don't think of them as just other humans, that they've elevated them in some way to being beyond a human being, beyond they can't be related to in any kind of normal way. They have to be idolized and romanticized.
Yeah. Stan culture.
Yeah.
Stan culture, where it's just like, you know, maybe every part of your online persona is based around this person or something. Yeah, I get it.
And I think, I don't know, maybe you and I are particularly, you know, averse to this thinking simply for living in Los Angeles and, you know, kind of bumping into quote unquote celebrities all the time. And you kind of get this, you kind of realize, and being in entertainment field, you get this, you realize they're just people.
Yeah.
They're
I saw Tom Hanks punch a dog just like anyone else would. He just punched that dog.
I mean, it was Hooch.
And Hooch deserved it. You see, the Disney Plus series, Turner and Hooch, is actually a remake of a film starring Tom Hanks.
Kids ask your parents.
About the scary CG man from the Polar Express and what he did in the 80s. I didn't see Tom Hanks punch a dog. I saw Chet Hanks punch a dog. That's not true either.
But regardless, you are obsessed with celebrity culture. We've established that.
I love celebrity culture. Oh, can't get enough celebrities. I'm a little obsessed with the Spider Boys right now. All the three Spider-Mans.
Which is your favorite Spider-Man?
Garfield. It's also my favorite pizza. Cat.
A lasagna, I mean.
Yeah.
I messed that up. He's the dreamiest. He's certainly the dreamiest.
He's my favorite. I think he was underutilized, and I think he was very good. There's
certainly a Garfield essence happening, I think.
And it's well deserved. Yeah. It's well deserved.
I agree.
This next one that I found. Researchers at Northwestern have developed an injectable therapy based on nanofibers that has enabled paralyzed mice with severe spinal cord injuries to regain their ability to walk.
Well, first of all, we're paralyzing a lot of mice.
That's
my first takeaway.
Yep.
My first takeaway is we're snapping a lot of mice spines.
We are snapping right so many mice spines. I feel so bad because Jeff, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up, one of the top comments on this is some poor guy going, how did they find that many mice with severe spinal cord injuries?
Oh, our sad, poor little
What a sweet summer child.
Yes.
Oh, I wish I could still live in the world that this guy lives in.
I bet he is obsessed with celebrity culture.
So, and somebody responded, you know, they caused the injuries surgically. And then at the end of the experiment, they're killed no matter the result.
Yeah.
And
yeah, sorry.
And a different person comes in and goes, wait, why are they killed no matter the result?
I wonder if they can walk again, let them free. Let them free. Spines. Give them the evidence. Why are you destroying them?
And it's like, God, I wish, Jeff, I wish it was 6 years ago when we started this show and I could just be back in the frame of mind that these people are in, you know, and I wasn't so jaded about the way we treat mice. Cause it's just like, hey man,
oh yeah.
Who's right. feeding and you taking and care of that mouse? Yeah. Who's going to take care
of a journey of the, we've started to relate more to the mouse than anything else.
Yeah. I'm just like, whatever. Yeah, man, you got to get rid of that. So somebody's like, I don't understand. And the same guy is like, wait a minute. Cause somebody goes, oh, well, that would be a separate study. He goes, wait, I don't understand. You're wounding the mice, fixing them, and then not using the opportunity to evaluate the long-term effect of the fix. And the guys, and somebody had to explain to him, it's like, look, man, you get a grant for one study.
Two studies, man. That's two studies.
That's two studies. Bro. And if there's no money for the second study.
We don't have a methodology for this. We're thrilled the first study worked.
Buddy.
We haven't even started working on that second study, bro.
We injected these peptides that have nanofibers and we fused a spine back together. We get
fucking paper to write.
We get to snap a few celebratory mice. You know what I mean? Let us have this.
Mice all night long, baby.
And that's the thing is like, I was like, oh, we should talk about this because it's really cool. And I was just like, no, actually, I know the only thing that Jeff and I will have to say about this.
That's so true. You're so right. 6 years ago, we would have talked about this study at length. And now the first thing we're like, let's talk about that. Those mice and the fucking horror show that is their lives.
Yo, we just murdered a lot of mice. We injured and then murdered a lot of mice. And we gave some of them hope before we murdered them.
That is the graph of the We Have Concerns experience.
I just imagine people who are sort of newish listeners listening to us cackling with glee right now. Y'all don't get it, but like go back and like get a couple hundo episodes in and you'll know.
Yeah.
You'll be where we are.
Mm. Excited about the results of the study though.
Oh, yeah, listen.
Very promising.
Huge implications, medical research, yada, yada, yada. We snapped some mice. So this next one is a new paper that is based on something that we talked about before, which is, does being in marriage or a long-term committed relationship actually make somebody happier? We talked a little bit about that. Does marriage make you happier? Does having kids make you happier? And it turned out, previously, as we were talking about it, turned out the answer was no.
Yeah.
Turned out it was no.
I mean, my first question is my wife listening? And then my second question answer is, nah, it's not going to make you happier.
It's not going to do anything. But there's a new study that was just published that says, oh, it was no until the pandemic.
Oh, interesting.
And now people who are in a healthy long-term relationship are way happier than people who are not.
That's interesting. You know, I think that will be an interesting study over the long term of this experience of our last 2 years, because I think we saw a bunch of, uptick of divorces right at the beginning of the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? Because people are like, oh, fuck, I can't be around this person all the time.
Yeah.
You know, like all the time. And then I think the people that weathered that, like the relationships that weathered that and now have sort of like been in the pandemic for a long time.
Yeah.
Now you're like, we're in this. We know each other better than we ever had.
Yeah.
And we're weathering the storm. You know, it's like the movie where we got our backs to each other. We each got our gun out and we got our back. We're back to back now. And that's what, you know, that's all we got is our each other. We're surrounded by zombies and that's all we got.
Well, and even, you know, when you think about the zombie apocalypse films and you think about the person that's been surviving like alone on their own, versus the person, like versus the people that are in a group, and they find that one person who's been surviving alone, and that one person who's surviving alone is, inevitably always like a little unhinged, or like right. angry and scared, or like can't relate to things anymore, and like even just having right. one person, you know, that's yeah. a big deal. That's a big deal.
That's right. That's why you need Turner needs Hooch.
Turner needs, or else you can't become. You can't just punch him.
Or else you become a castaway, Tom Hanks. You know? That's castaway, Tom
Hanks. That's castaway.
You don't have a Hooch.
You have a Wilson, I guess, which is not the same. You have a Wilson. Which is not the same. And then I guess, we'll call this the final one here. I have a stack of these, and they're.
I'm enjoying Lightning Round. I'm digging Lightning Round. We got to do this more often. This is good.
Okay. Well, let's do two more then.
All right.
This new one is a study from applied cognitive psychology. And it was done by a team at UCLA. And it basically says watching or listening to something twice at double speed.
Oh, no.
Will benefit learning better than listening or watching to it once at normal speed.
Whoa, that's fascinating. Why?
I think because you get more of the information than you think you do when you're listening to something at double speed or watching it at double speed. And
repetition probably is super important.
And the repetition.
Right? Hearing it twice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The repetition puts it in there. They use specifically lecture videos and lecture audio, which I would imagine is, you know, that stuff is a little slower paced anyway.
Is there any data about listening to it twice at normal speed?
Well, if you can listen to it twice at normal speed, I think they would say do it. But
right.
I think for me,
but you're saying the same amount of time used twice at double as opposed to once at single is better used listen to it at double speed.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly. Wow. They would do better on a test than if they watched it once at normal speed. Those who watched the second, okay, so here's the thing. The timing matters because what they did was they had these kids take a test afterwards, right? So here's what they do. You watch the video at 2x speed, and then you watch it at 2x speed again immediately before the test, not right after the first viewing.
Okay.
So you do it once, let it go, whatever.
Right.
Go about your day. And then a week later, you take the test, listen to it again, and you'll do better than somebody who just listened to it once at normal speed before the test.
Huh. But is that just sort of like a cramming method, or do you actually retain the information?
So that's the trick, right? That's the trick is does it actually help you retain? And what people who were part of the study said is they really felt a lot better watching it first at normal speed and then the second time at double time.
Oh, interesting.
Which is, you know, it's sort of outside. This was a study more about like, if you only have a certain amount of time to study.
Yeah.
And you only want to put a certain amount of free time towards studying, what's the optimal way to do it? And that is, do this second listen, get the immediate recall benefit. Maybe you don't remember it as well, but if you have unlimited time, obviously listen to it twice at normal speed. But a lot of kids were like, hey, I listened to it once at normal speed, so I really take it in. And then the second time really hammers at home.
That's wild. This is something that literally was not possible for me when I was in college. Like there was no way to listen to things at double speed when I was in college.
Oh, I used to have
that option.
I used to have a digital recorder. like a little digital recorder. And it would play.
Is it double speed?
It would do double speed or half speed because it was for people who did transcription, you know? It was like an office style voice recorder. And I would bring it in and I would set it down. The problem with me is like, because of the ADHD, I have sensory things and I just, if something is going fast enough to where I can hear that it's not supposed to be that fast, I can't take it in. It annoys me. I can do like, I've tried it with podcasts and I can do like 1.25, maybe, maybe with some stuff, if it's particularly slow and it's like slower news stuff, I can maybe do like a 1.5, but I know some people who like listen to everything at 2x speed.
I know.
And I can't, wild. I feel like I don't take anything in. I feel like it just grates on me.
People who listen to audiobooks like that.
Dude, how?
You know, like in narratives, you know, like fiction.
No.
Lots of people.
I know. And that's the other, like.
I'm opposed to it too, but.
I can speed read pretty well, but I can't do it with fiction. I refuse.
I just feel like it takes the joy out of it. I like to luxuriate in the experience.
Yeah. You're supposed to really like imagine it and like hear the voices and do the things. I don't know. I don't, no shade to anybody who takes things in the way that they take things in, but like, I can't do it. I wish I could. I wish I could.
I don't know if I wish I could. I think maybe I wish I could. I feel like there are certain things that the rhythm of it is part of it. And you mess with the rhythm and you kind of ruin it.
Yeah.
I mean, people watch Netflix at 2x speed, you know, it's crazy to me.
That's wild. There was an app that would take long pauses out of podcasts.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's there for pacing maybe.
Right. Right. They're not just letting that be in the show because they can't think of what to say next.
Yeah. If there are a lot of long pauses that you need to remove from a podcast, like maybe that's not a great podcast. Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But so to me, it's like, removing the pauses and listening double time is like just having this constant like yammering in your head and I can't take anything right. in. I don't know.
Yeah. It does feel like drinking from a fire hose a bit.
Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that's it. It feels connected to like productivity culture in a way that I don't enjoy where it's like, right. I listen to 18 productivity and business podcasts and I learn so much more than everybody else. I'm like, do you
maximize your time? Maximize it.
I'm minimizing all of my time. I'm doing the least possible from here until death. Just so everybody knows what my plan is from here on out. Minimize. Okay, one last one. This is the very last one. You know how the astronauts get football eye?
Oh, yeah. Meaning their eye literally is the shape of a football because it gets squished by lack of gravity.
We talked about this. They get the football eye and they get the cones. Yeah. They get the cone-shaped eyes. And then, unfortunately, they see different and they're weird and everybody can tell that they have football eyes and they laugh at them.
Yeah, and also there's probably an alien presence inside them some way that passed from the cosmic rays that they passed through.
It's an astronaut's wife situation, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, they have created a new and exciting way to stop this from happening, Jeff, the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center.
Go fighting Longhorns.
Yeah, go them. What do you think this revolutionary device is that keeps the eyeballs from getting footballed?
Please don't say suction cup.
No.
Is it suction cup?
It's not suction cup.
Thank God.
But sort of.
You know, I've had eye surgery. I'm sensitive to the eye shit.
I'll tell you this. They don't have to directly fuck with the eye.
Okay. Thank you. Is it a helmet of some kind?
Close. It is a high-tech sleeping bag.
Sleeping bag?
It's a new sleeping bag. As we know, all of the good astronauts have to get tucked into their sleeping bags and strapped to the wall before they go to bed.
Yep.
Otherwise, they'll float around and bonk their cute little astronaut noggins.
Yeah, and you say, good night, you princes of space, and you astronauts of tomorrow.
And a little robot comes by to kiss them on the forehead. And that's NASA, and that's what we pay them for. It is a bag that creates a vacuum that sucks bodily fluids from the head towards the feet. Because as
I said no suction cups, Anthony.
I said kind of one, but it doesn't. It's not the eye in particular. It's a full body vacuum suction cup, Jeff. Hear me out. And it doesn't cover, it covers almost everything but the eye, my dude.
Just getting sucked all night long? I mean, who would want that?
Yeah, all right, man. So, this basically, we know that this problem happens. They get shrinking hearts. They get like,
yeah,
you know, all of this stuff. And it's because circulation's tough in space. There ain't no gravity, and your body can't pump the blood to all the extremities. This bad boy will suck the fluids right down to your feet, my dude.
How do it work?
Big suck.
the suckling bag?
Yeah, just a big sucking bag.
I'm just imagining getting into something that looks like some sort of alien sack, and it's just like making a slurping sound.
I bet it does sound. I think it probably does sound a little bit like that. There's no video or anything, but you know, I do want to say that this football
HR Geiger shit, Anthony. This is what this is.
It's pretty weird. I mean, it basically just looks. I mean, it looks mostly like a regular sleeping bag. Except for the bits that
don't.
This is like
the sleeping bag from Existenz. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it does have a bit of a Cronenbergian vibe to it. It doesn't look as gelatinous as I think you're picturing. It's basically a sleeping bag, right, that they're in. And then actually the top is like a rigid wooden platform almost.
Huh.
So it's kind of like you go in and you kind of like attach this collar almost, like it's like a big hoop around your waist, and then the bag just kind of creates a vacuum inside of that. So it's almost like you're in one of those I was gonna say like one of those vacuum sandwich bags or the vacuum bags you put your sweaters in, and it's basically you put your bottom half in that.
Oh, it sounds awful.
Yeah. Does it sound less awful than going up to space with 20/20 vision and returning with 2100 vision, which happens?
Yikes.
2100. That's so many worse.
Yeah, that's a lot worse. I can get behind this. I just feel like, man, what a strange solution. I suppose basically what they're doing is creating the pull of gravity on you.
Yeah.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Essentially with this weird Cronin bag.
I hope they call it the Cronin bag.
They call it the David Cronin bag. Anyway, that's a bunch of weird science stuff I found this week.
Ah, so good. I like the lightning round. That was so good. Which was your favorite?
I have to say,
snapping rat spines.
I don't want to say that because I don't like what it says about me.
Yeah.
It did unfortunately make me laugh in a way that I do not enjoy about myself. And I'm going to have to look into that.
Sure.
I'm going to have to look into that. But I would say probably the thing that's most interesting to me is listening to things at double speed and like, what is the optimal way to take in information? And
seems very useful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny about those mice, though.
It is. Poor mice.
Poor mice. You have to laugh, because if you don't, you'll cackle, and that's even weirder.
It's worse. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Remember to check out the Patreon, patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. We're in a new year, baby.
Yeah.
It's all happening.
Give us a dollar.
Give us, you can do it. Just give us a dollar.
We can do it.
Patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.